place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When the sun goes down and the moon comes up,
and we are going to talk to Hammer first. And as I mentioned this morning, I knew yesterday after we got off the air and we started to see the sad news that that David Crosby had passed at 82. And first and foremost, quite a character, but more than anything, a brilliant, he had a great voice. He just, there was so much about him that was admirable as a musician. And Hammer, I knew you had to have seen him a bunch of times.
Well, I did, you know, obviously, in various forms, you know. He was one of those magical people from that magical time. I was fortunate enough to grow up in LA when all this stuff was going on. And, you know, ironically, when I was kind of making notes, and you know what I do, I have a notebook that I use every week, or, you know, each week. And if I find a little tidbit that I might want to talk about, I put it in the book and blah, blah, blah. And ironically, I was going to talk about this Neil Young show that I watched the other night on when he was at the Ryman, and blah, 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 boom. And all of a sudden, you know, the news came down about David Crosby, and I was making notes last night. And as I look at my notebook, the last thing was David Crosby, you know, get ready type of thing. And then you text me in the middle of the night saying, hey, you want to do the David Crosby thing? And so, you know, since, you know, literally 4 a.m, I've been, you know, thinking about some David Crosby stuff. But so he's, you know, obviously known probably most for the, you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. And, CSNY as it is, and in many cases just CSN. And, you know, a crazy little thing is, when we were younger listening to the albums, you know, and Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, But I always wonder, like, who came up with that order? Like, if it was Nash, Young, Stills, Crosby, or Stills, Young, it just didn't have the flow, but Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young just flows right off your tongue.
That's true. You know, pretty, that's, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just perfect. I mean, I always think, like, were they sitting there twisted up, you know, thinking about, okay, how are we gonna do this? And then it finally came out. But so he's the C, obviously, in Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. And more importantly, in the whole scheme of things, he was one of the leaders of the Laurel Canyon movement here in Los Angeles. Now, he was actually a local guy. He was born here in Los Angeles. I think his dad was in movies or film or something along those lines. So he didn't have to move. But when he got hooked up with the Birds in the mid '60s with Roger McGuinn and Hillman and Clark and whatever, and then they started the Birds. They were the first kind of group to bring that folksy new style music to Los Angeles, and they may be the first rock and roll band to ever have a, quote, like a residency. And they moved in and played at this nightclub called Ciro's, C-I-R-O-S. I don't think it's the same thing as the restaurant on Sunset Boulevard, but it was a nightclub. And they played there for like 2 years, you know, whether it was just the weekends or, you know, they probably two shows a night on Fridays and Saturdays, something like that. But they were really consistent. And through that sound, that folksy sound, came what they call the Laurel Canyon movement, which is a place up in the Hollywood Hills right above Hollywood. And it was the hill, the Santa Monica Mountains. It's the hill between Ventura Boulevard and the San Fernando Valley where I lived, and Hollywood Boulevard and Sunset Boulevard on the other side. And when you went to Hollywood from where I was, you went over the hill. That's what they call it. And you had your choice of going through Beverly Glen, Coldwater Canyon, or Laurel Canyon. And literally that was the name of the street, and the area was called Laurel Canyon. And actually, when you go over to Laurel Canyon, you hit Hollywood Boulevard, and when it hits Sunset, it changes into a street called Crescent Heights. And right there on the corner, you'll like this, of Crescent Heights and Sunset, was Schwab's Drugs.
Sure.
Where Lana Turner was discovered. But anyway, so because of the sound of, you know, with the Birds, I mean, all of a sudden Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young moved into the area up in the hills. Frank Zappa was up there at his compound. The Eagles lived up there. Joni Mitchell, Carole King, the Doors. So they lived in like the same neighborhood up in the hills, and they would just, you know, go over to each other's houses at night and play music and trade songs and do all kinds of stuff. And you know, a lot of stuff came out of there in those 10 years. But that band that the Birds started here, and of course their number one hit was Mr. Tambourine Man, ironically as a Bob Dylan song. But, you know, everybody knows that song, and, you know, sung by Dylan, a little bit rougher around the edges, of course. But the song by the Birds, when you listen to that, put that thing on today. I mean, I'll tell you what, that is one of the most perfect songs that was ever written and ever performed. You know, it's got some nice lyrics, you know, and it's singable, and it's got some riffs in it, and it's just, hey, Mr. Tambourine, and, you know, in the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you. And so that kind of started the movement out here. And of course, they had other songs, you know, Turn, 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 and You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star, and 8 Miles High, and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And then, you know, you go into the crowd, then you had David from that band, and then you had Graham Nash from the Hollies, and then Stephen Stills from Buffalo Springfield. And they're all kind of breaking up at the same time, and, you know, poof, here comes Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and sometimes Young type of thing. And they did what they did, and, you know, probably the first super band that instruments weren't the big deal. It was all about the voices and the harmonies. And so they did what they did, and, you know, I mean, the album, I don't even remember the name of the album. The album, the three of them were just sitting on the couch on a front porch somewhere up in Laurel Canyon. I remember that, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, and just the number song. So, you know, he was part of that group that just kind of opened up that new wave, Jackson Browne, that kind of, you know, mellow type of stuff. And, you know, of course he went on and those four guys, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, they were, you know, four big egos that weren't going to last too long, you know, all together. And Neil was the first to drop out as he probably had the biggest ego of them all. But, you know, Crosby, Stills and Nash performed. And then when they kind of all went away, David Crosby and Graham Nash did their deal for a while. And I ended up seeing them numerous times. And I was living up in the Bay Area, too, at the Bammies and things like that. And then they all went their separate ways. And probably of the four, David Crosby was probably the least of the songwriting group. He did write, you know, Wooden Ships and Guinevere and a couple of, you know, really nice songs, but he kept performing. In fact, I read a little deal the other day that he actually performed last year up in Santa Monica. He just loved that live stuff. And there's a couple of videos out there. If you're not too familiar with the era, I think there's one called Echoes of the Canyon that Jacob Dylan narrates, and it's very good. And there's actually there's a show on somewhere Netflix about the Sunset Strip music era, and it tells about the early stuff. But anyway, just one of those, you know, I call one of the Magic 100 for me. You know, like 100 just sounds like a lot, but it's not when you throw in the Beatles and the Stones and the Doors and the Grateful Dead and the Eagles and, you know, Zeppelin. You know, he's, you know, that group, they're in there, that just like foundation of music that a lot of us grew up with. So, yeah, that was, you know, just another one. You know, Jeff Beck not too long ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of memories.
Yeah, that album you're thinking of is the Crosby, Stills, and Nash 1969. The CSN was the album that the one on the boat of them on a boat, black album with a photo. That was one of the first important albums that I remember. And I was in high school and then brought it to college. And then, you know, when Neil Young got involved, that really even further galvanized for me. Yeah. But him as a standalone, I mean, other than, you know, he had a couple of funny, you know, he had that crazy, silly, what was that silly hit of his, they took my license away. Now I don't drive, my Maserati does 185, lost my license. Now I don't drive.
Yeah. Well, he went through a lot of personal, yeah. You know, he had a lot of demons as, you know, he had, you know, heroin, he had a liver transplant.
That's right. I forgot about that. That's right.
Yeah. And, you know, he was a fighter. And, you know, of the four, you know, probably the most political of the bunch. And he's I think he sent his last tweet like 2 days ago. He always had something to say. Anybody on Twitter that is around, you always heard from David Crosby. You know, kind of a cantankerous guy. And, you know, the four, you know, of three of the four, I think three of the four speak, you know, on a semi-regular basis, but David wasn't one of them. I think he kind of lost contact, but, you know, if you read some of the tributes, obviously you're hearing from Graham Nash and, you know, whatever they did what they did, you know, had some magical times together, but, you know, David Crosby, they just, what can you say?
We'll
just part of that.
We'll play Tambourine Man when we wrap up, and then we'll close the show with just a song, which I love. Song before I go. So tough. Hammer, a couple of thoughts. We got.
Real quick. You know, I call it back to school. I've been back to school for 2 days now over at Santa Anita, learning my new situation as a consultant, as opposed to being the hands-on thing. And, you know, I got to tone down a little bit, and it's, you know, I've had a nice reception, and, you know, the attitude over there is a lot more positive than I know that it's been in the last few years. And, if it's good, I feel good. I'm hoping I can help out here and there and, you know, get a few things done. I wanted to just touch base real quick. Something that was in the TDN yesterday that happened in New York about this rule change, about equipment and stuff. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Okay. So you know, I wanted to double check, and I actually called a trainer back there yesterday to say, is this, did I read this right? Is this happening? And they said, yeah, we can't believe it. So I correct me if I'm saying this wrong. So there's a new rule that I don't know who implemented it, but, you know, we take entries up for races, and lots of times for a Saturday card, the entries will be taken Monday or Tuesday, and they call up, and we put together a sheet that's called the overnight, if you've seen one, it has the post, the number of the horse, the name of the horse, the equipment, the what he's, you know, if he's got Lasix, the owner, the trainer, and the weight is basically on that. We put that out. And, you know, that's put out for a reason for people to look at and, oh, geez, you know, might be a mistake. We get it corrected and everything like that. But now there's a rule there, I believe, that if there's an equipment change, like a blinkers, and it wasn't noted on the overnight, that you cannot fix it, you know, 3, 4, 5 days out before the race. And my understanding was that the reason was we're trying to protect the better, right? That was the reason.
Supposedly.
So somebody makes a mistake and forgets to write it down. Why should that horse not run at his optimum performance? So, you know, the trainer thinks that horse that should run in blinkers because it's going to make him run better. So now you're saying you're going to make that horse not maybe run his best race. And so that doesn't help the better. That's even worse. And here's the owner that's paid the bills for a month. They're getting ready for this race, and now you can't make a change to, you know, make this horse run better. But yet on that overnight are other things that, you know, the weight's wrong. Can you change that, or you have to leave it alone? And, you know, the biggest thing to me is we're talking about a set of blinkers, which may or may not be good. But in the post parade, if a jockey falls off and, you know, twists his ankle, we can change the jockey, no problem. And you don't think that's a bigger change than a blinker change? I don't know. But the way it's done at many tracks is, you know, hey, you know what? I looked at the overnight on Monday, and Tuesday morning I call the race office. I go, hey, you know what? What's that blinkers on that horse? Oh, okay, good. And then you fix it before scratch time or announcing time, with plenty of time for the public to know. And, you know, I think as far as I know, it's the only track that doesn't allow that change. And, you know, there's got to be some kind of happy medium there where that's why we put the overnight out, to check the information, to make the corrections. And, you know, I'm hoping that group who changed this rule will come to their senses. And, you know, David, even, you know, they made it. What if I made the mistake? What if the entry clerk made a mistake? What if it just got left off? It just doesn't make sense. So I'm hoping that gets fixed. And, you know, David Dong made a comment on there about this. He goes, hey, you know, we call up and make our entries. Why can't I make my entries online and have my checkbox? And guess what, David? That is coming. It's not going to be tomorrow, or it's not going to be next year, but there's a group working on that where, yes, you're going to be able to go. Each, you know, horseman will be able to go to their go-to website in the morning and check their stuff and do their heist and stuff and enter their horses all at once. And, you know, do it that way. But anyway, I just, that rule just kind of hit home. And I know a couple of us have talked, and, you know, that we do around the country. It's like, oh my gosh, how can they do this? So I hope they redo that. So I wanted to just get that in. I just, you know, sometimes you just shake your head where it came in out of the blue. I don't think they even had a discussion with it. So,
well, everything involving the quote unquote steward in question comes out of nowhere. Anybody that read any of the coverage, I was saving this for next week, but anybody that read the coverage can tell. I mean, Naira is blindsided by this. It's just stupidity. It's just so tiresome between the oversight board and this overzealous steward and I just preposterous. I mean,
really?
As Pat McKenna clearly said, there's mechanisms in place to inform the public. So this is completely idiotic and an intrusion in the way the racing is run.
Well, 100%. We're in a communication that is highest it's ever been in this world. I mean, we got Twitter, we got naked announcers, we got scrolls, we got this. the word gets out. And, you know, that he made a great comment on that. And, you know, there's some rules that, you know what, you don't talk about, you just make them and you say this. But when it comes down to racing and all the effects that it has on people, you need to get a small group together and say, hey, this is what we're thinking of doing. And you need to hear, you know, come to a consensus that, you know, let's do what's right here. I don't think this is right. But anyway, that one hit me. Some of the stuff I just let go, but that one hit me. But anyway, we're back here in Santa Anita. It's sunny and boy, it's chilly. I mean, it's in the 40s, but that's here nor there. That's a California whining about a little 40 degree. But it's no rain. You know, everything's back on the turf, fast and firm here for the weekend. And one thing that it's the return of, but it's going to be a staple, is this coast to coast pick five. And I wanted to, you know, talk about that. I you know, one of the things I'm doing is, you know, I'm talking about awareness. You know, we got to make this a little bit more aware. But I've got the rundown for those of you that want to play this. Now, this is a pick five that encompasses Santa Anita and Gulfstream, just the two tracks. It's not like a bing, 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 bing. It starts at 4 o'clock and ends at 6:30 Eastern. So it's not like we tried to do that thing in an hour. That song. This is so we have it starts with race three at Santa Anita, and then it goes to race nine at Gulfstream, then race 11 at Gulfstream, then race six at Santa Anita, and then race eight at Santa Anita. So those are the rundowns. And the best thing that I like about this bet is the minimum. It's a $1 minimum for the pick five. So steps it up a little bit. Of course, last week with Santa Anita canceling, it didn't play on Saturday. It'll be Saturdays and Sundays. But the previous Saturday, I think the pool is like 470 something.
Yeah.
So the pool here is going to be healthy. So take a look into it. 15% takeout, which also is very, you know, good for the player. So it's a good bet. I'm waiting for the first track to step up and do a $2 pick five, seriously, and kind of get that, since we don't have that $2 pick six anymore. But anyway, it's a dollar minimum to try and, you know, get some interesting fields. And that's why you don't see the consecutive races. They're trying to pick out some races that are, you know, interesting to handicap, and you know, a bunch of different types of races in that race is the stake involved is the Astra, which is a feature at Santa Anita. It's the eighth race on the card, which is a race for Philly and Mears going a mile and a half here. It's a listed event for $100,000, and came up with a real nice field, and I'm going to take a look at that. And you know, as usual, the longer the race, the more I look for who's got the speed type of thing in those races. As you know, many, many times you get disillusioned thinking, oh, well, they're going long. I need a closer. I needed that closer that was closing last time in a mile. And, you know, a mile, he's going to love this mile and a half, but not always the case. Tough to find some, you know, super real speed in here. Lady Clementine might show a little bit. You've got the mystery horse from Michael McCarthy, first time USA, that's been, you know, running like crazy, winning like crazy in Chile, 9 for 19, and has won a grand total of $88,000. You know, included in those are some graded races. And I used to have my man AC Avila, who was here, and I could call AC up and go, okay, is this horse any good? Or, I mean, what are these races? He'd go, no. Or he would tell me, yes, this race is really good. This race is really good. So, you know, this is a win machine. So 9 out of 19, you got to take a look at this horse, Estrella Mia. I mentioned Lady Clementine. Looks like of some of these might be a little closer to the pace from George Papa Padromo. And of course, as we say, Flavian Pratt rides. You can't let him go by in the turf here at all out here. So, you know, he's in there. Another horse I looked at that I think might be a little interesting is Barrister's Ride from Carly Gaines. You know, still an allowance type horse at 12 to 1, and looks like she might like the distance here too. But a good sequence, Steve, to look at to get maybe back into this pick five. Like I said, spend some time on it. The pool's worth it, and you're going to get paid if you hit it.
Well, we talked to Michael W. McCarthy last week, and as we were doing a little bit of a barn tour, we got to Duvet Day that Burt Bacharach and company own the Star Spangled Banner, now a 4-year-old's coming out of the American Oaks, and I'm very interested in her. She's going to keep getting better.
I agree. You know, it's like I said, I mentioned that Australia Mia, the nine win horse, because she's just is a winner type. A lot of these are, you know, one, two, three races. And, you know, not that they're not trying, but like I said, the one puts it across. But you're right. Coming out of the grade one American Oaks, ran okay. You know, didn't get disgraced, but obviously dropping down in company and stretching back out, and has been this distance before, close to it. And I agree. So that's the anchor of this baby. And I didn't go too much into the other races, so I knew we were going to talk about other stuff. But, you know, take a look at the card. We'll obviously be spending a lot more time now on the Santa Anita races, which is great. And, you know, the turf racing here, you know, I went looking out over the turf course. I mean, with the 3 weeks of rain, I mean, the turf's going to be pounded out here, which is great, pounded, used a lot. And, you know, I lead to say it's probably going to be some of the best turf racing in the country here. So keep an eye on that, you know, where the rails are and things like that. And we'll be talking about that more. Real quick update on the standings, just to get you, if you haven't been following because of some of the cancellations in the jock standings, Juan Hernandez is right now just running away with the he's ahead 17-6. Over Edwin Maldonado and the Pratt and DeTore, you know, an interesting lineup here. You know, when you read down here, you got Flavian Pratt, Gianfranco DeTore, Mike Smith, Johnny V. So, you know, you're going to get a rider you like when you like a horse out here this year. It's kind of cool to see that. Training wise, Baffert is on top right now with 11, and Gladys right there with him with 7, and Doug O'Neill and John Sadler and D'Amato and stuff. So some of the usual players there. But, you know, I've been away and haven't been following this that closely over the year, last few years, obviously. Back into it, and I'm very excited to be back on the scene and trying to, you know, kind of help out everywhere as opposed to just hanging out in the racing office.
Well, there's plenty of good racing this weekend, the Sunday sequence: Gulfstream 8th and 9th, Santa Anita 3rd, Gulfstream 10th, Santa Anita 5th. That's on Sunday to go with tomorrow. Santa Anita 3rd, Gulfstream 9, Gulfstream 11, Santa Anita 6 and 8. And as it happens, the nightcap, is it the nightcap? Yeah, the 10th. A couple of notable, something caught my eye in the 10th. Pioneer Prince for Mandela and My Racehorse happens to be a half of Princess of Silmar. And in fact, at Gulfstream, not in the sequence in the Coast to Coast, but notable in the third. Actually, excuse me, Idle Chatter is the Princess of Silmar sibling at Gulfstream. That other horse I mentioned, Pioneer Prince, is out of Believe You Can, the Oaks winner of Brary Jones. So some quite a bit of maiden action. In addition to everything else going on with the Coast to Coast. So, Hammer, let me send us off. I'm going to bring in Nick Tamaro, but Mr. Tambourine Man, to pay tribute here to David Crosby.
Very good. And hopefully they're playing your Eagle song here tomorrow.
There you go. Rick Hammerly, everybody, away they go.
Boot heels to be wandering.
got one more cut. I'm going to close the show. The first thing I thought of when I thought about what music we could play for David Crosby, I thought about just the song, right?
There you go.
You're a little young though for this, right? For this kind of, you know, between the Birds and McGuinn Clark Hillman, CSN, CSNY.
Yeah, a little bit.
Just
a little bit young.
Yeah, just a touch. But when I was when I was growing up, and especially when I got to college, when I got to Colgate, and I was a DJ. But it's funny, of all those guys, and I saw McGuinn Clark and Hillman. They came to Colgate actually, and they were great. And who was it that Jorma Kekkonen played acoustic a couple times at Colgate, but I was more Neil Young. Neil Young was the hook for me for all those guys. Nick, we don't have a ton to talk about actually. Let's get a quick Sam Houston. Let's get SHRP covered.
Yeah, we're going to draw tomorrow for the Houston Racing Festival. Still an opportunity for anybody who wants to come down next week and play in the NHC qualifier. We got a couple of spots available. And I'll tell you what, our noms, fingers crossed, our noms are very strong for the HLC. I think we're looking potentially at having at a minimum three prior graded stake winners, including the defending champ, Pauline's Pearl. Looks like we're also going to get Hidden Connection, who, of course, won the Pocahontas.
Oh, yeah.
As a two-year-old, she's got a big local tie there, being owned by Jake Ballas's Black Type Thoroughbreds. Jake, of course, is a Houston native, and some of his partners are from the Houston area as well, so kind of a natural for them to run. And it looks like I think we're going to get 63 Caliber, winner of the Cumley for Tom Amos.
Wow.
Who, of course, ran Serengeti Empress in the HLC a couple of years ago. And Mike Maker nominated about 64 horses for the John Connolly Turf Cup. Actually, only 11. So it should be a nice size field there. And so it's a, you know, fun weekend in that regard. We're just 3 days of live racing this week: Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Going to be that schedule. The rest of the meet, with the exception of President's Day week, will run on Monday, February 20th. Some of you out there probably read Matt Hegarty's story yesterday, and you know, it seems, looking at it from a third-party perspective, taking my role as the announcer out for a second, the kind of the, you know, the elbowing that Matt was doing in his piece, which was well-written as always, as we've grown to expect from Matt every time, is, you know, are the horsemen fully understanding what the situation is? And, you know, that's the real question moving forward, is do the horsemen understand that while the purse account may be guaranteed, the likelihood that racing continues, based on Chris McAuleen's quotes in yesterday's story by Matt Hegarty, that racing continues without export beyond 2023 is exceptionally low. So, you know, that's kind of the thought process that I think there's some hope everybody, all the stakeholders, fully grasp. And, you know, we'll continue to hope for the best and prepare for the worst, as I said last week.
All right. I didn't know if we were going to get into that, but glad you mentioned it. All right, let's.
I can't miss an opportunity to do whatever I can to risk my job, right? I mean, I can't. My big mouth. My mother always told me, "You in that mouth."
The weekend does look like it's got great potential, and I know I was trying to convince the champ. Bacik is looking for his to punch his ticket. I said, "Why don't you go to Houston?" And he said, "You know what?" He said, "I think that's a good idea. So you may have the champ there. Maybe to, you know, maybe you could shoehorn him in for a couple of opinions."
That'd be great. Yeah, we would love to have everybody. Marshall Graham is coming down.
Nice.
Jack Jenkins is coming. So I think we'll have a good amount of representation. And I think a lot of people are looking at it as probably a relatively easy spot to qualify potentially. And so yeah, I think we'll have a decent enough chance.
Excellent. Well, let's get a little New York in if you got anything. I did want to ask you. We're going to end up running into time constraints today, but I did want to ask you particularly about, because yesterday was a slight example of this, about the dollar commitment. And yesterday I kind of short-armed my pick five play in the late sequence and hit the, you and I were talking about it as it was right after it ended. hit the pick four, which was fine. It covered the day's action, the plays. But you know, if I put the ticket in probably for, you know, $96, I hit it and it pays, you know, pays $850, $870, I think, with the favorite that won. I needed the second choice, Rafua, who I still am convinced wins if Gomez just gets off the rail. I mean, every winner is coming from the five path, and he's sloshing it down in the down on the rail. Anyway, what's the dividing line for you, Nick, when building the ticket? I mean, do you just say, all right, this is the minimum amount of horses I'm going to use, and then layer them on? I mean, what is your deciding factor on the budget?
You know, I think that you, obviously, this is a subjective situation because obviously, you know, people are going to play at all different levels. So I think what I always do, regardless of the sequence, is go through and grade out my opinion. So basically, even if I'm not going to structure it in an ABC type of format, and I might play just some, you know, some varying quote unquote caveman tickets, I still want to at least know and identify who my main opinions are. And so, you know, then you know, hey, I mean, my main opinion might be 2x3x1x2x3 or something like that. And, you know, and then I think you want to go back through and identify anybody that you want to press. So, you know, that part of the exercise, maybe you go from A to A plus, and then you just start to sort of build tickets. And you know, I think it's important that when you're doing it, you consider not only building tickets and betting them, but sometimes building tickets and not, and just seeing, you know, where your opinions were, especially if you lack confidence or if your bankroll might not be where it needs to be in order to make that kind of bet. I think the exercise itself is actually very important. And, you know, this is where a lot of players get tripped up. This is exactly where our best scores happen. And when we miss them is exactly how we translate our handicapping opinion into how we're going to bet it. And, you know, I will admit that after having a very, very good 2022, I kind of hit the skids middle of December, and now I'm back in, you know, well, let me be cautious. Let me be prudent. Let me make sure that I'm looking at these sequences closer. Let me make sure I'm not missing anything, because when you're winning, sometimes you get I have a tendency to get a little sloppier and a little bit more like a degenerate. And I, you know, I need to be a little bit more careful about that, because you have to be looking at this in a very disciplined way. So I think that's the important part, and understanding that if you're not being critical of every horse that you could potentially use in order to find the right ones, then I think you're ruining the exercise. So now the last thing I'll say about that without filibustering you is that a sequence like yesterday, where you were frustrated because your horse that you needed in the last finished second, and so obviously you structured your ticket to kind of lean on that horse, that's one of those situations where, even, I mean, look, a $900 score is a good score for the majority of the audience. I'll take a $900 score. It just goes that way. At least it wasn't 9,000, yeah. Right? So what you want to say to yourself is, okay, I got myself in position. I'm going to continue to get myself in position. And more often than not, I feel like I'm going to make the right decision here. And you let your bankroll sort of work around that.
Now, and that's my, you know, that's my general approach anyway, but it's funny, I've done nothing different coming out of a period of incredible frustration and countless misses. I've done the exact, really the same thing, and have, you know, been able since opening day at Santa Anita to have 3-4-figure scores. And yesterday, between the pick five, if Rafua wins, and the pick four, it's, you know, $1,200 again, and just a small, you know, just kind of playing around. I did the work. The card looked intriguing, and so it was just one of those things where I'm saying to myself, you know, why didn't I spend a little bit more? But I invariably talk myself out of spending more, Nick. I'm just not, and that's, again, I'll reiterate, I got tremendous respect for the guys that play with the fat bankroll and that are putting in, you know, really sizable tickets, pick fours and pick fives. and you know, $300, $400, $600. I get it. It only takes one $8,500, $9,500, $11,000 hit to make it all worthwhile. You know, clean up an aisle six.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and it took me a long time, and it was an expensive lesson to realize that when I was putting in hundreds of dollars on pick five tickets, I was probably giving myself really way too little opportunity to make a good score. And I was much better when I was more disciplined about it. When I was using, when I was going more narrow, when I was trying to accentuate opinions, I am just not somebody that will say, oh yeah, I had to pick five, 10 times. You know, I'm just, I am not wired that way. I do not. I have always thrived betting wise on chaos. And I've done some of my best work when chaotic things happened, like a 35-to-1 shot wins the first leg, or, you know, some huge price slides in the trifecta or something like that. I look at races more from a, not necessarily trying to find a horse and, you know, pounding away. So, I mean, one of my better wins in the second half of 2022 was the pick five on opening day at the Del Mar fall meet, and the late pick five, well, the late pick five, and my ticket was $48. So like, I just didn't, you know, I didn't like very many horses, and every single decision that I needed went my way. And it was one of those where you realize afterwards, boy, I better really remember this, because I mean, I was 2x2 to close it out, and I ran 1-2 in both of them. And so, you know, it was just one of those where it was structured well. So we're going to have those. We need to hit when it happens, when our opinions are that good. And if it does, then, you know, then we'll go on with it.
All right. I wanted to slip this in because, it, you know, we've got to do as much or more, you know, figuring out how to structure and bankroll application, et cetera. As we do on the handicapping front. And I do want, you know, we'll do a follow-up, Nick. Maybe, well, of course, next week we'll be excited about the stakes sequences. But at some point, maybe a midweek when you've got a quiet morning, I want to do a strategic conversation about understanding when you have that opinion. You know, it's easy for all of us to say to fledgling players, you know, leverage your best opinion. Okay, great. Thank you. How do I know it's my best opinion? How does it differentiate from my opinion in any other race? And even when I go back and look later on and say, oh, I was right about that. Why was it so much more apparent to me than other results? So I want to, because I think that's what's lacking, and it may strictly be a confidence in one's opinion and in one's understanding and comprehension of race scenario, and so that's a subjective thing in its own right. But I think that's what developing players feel that they need the most help in.
Yeah, I agree. And I think understanding that, you know, if you have what you think is a good opinion in the, you know, in the sixth race on a 9-race card, and you like an 8-to-1 shot, you know, you're not solving anything. You're not handling it the right way if you single the horse in the pick five. Because now you're saying, well, I really, my best opinion is in the second leg, and I'm going to make sure I really cash if I'm right about the other four legs too. So you can do that. And don't get me wrong, I would never discourage anybody from doing that.
Right.
But I would discourage somebody from doing only that. You know, take advantage of what might be available in the double pool or in the pick threes or to bet to win, you know, and to do all of that along the way. So, you know, there was a stake day a couple of years ago where I really liked a horse that I thought it had a big trip. I thought he was going to be probably 5-to-1 or so. He was the third leg of the pick four. I played pick threes ending with him, bet about 100 and change worth of pick threes, got alive to him for $5,000, and he won. Right. So that was exactly the right decision, because under no circumstance was I going to make a wager. I hated the last race. So was I going to make a wager on this horse at his win odds of $100, $120 and get back $5,000? Right. He paid $12. So, you know, that was I realized afterwards, okay, that was one where, you know, where I did it right. Now I have a laundry list of examples where I probably didn't take enough advantage of it, and the price was good, and, you know, and I didn't, I made some money, but I definitely could have done better. Occasionally it happens too, where your opinion is very good. Early November at Aqueduct, I loved Poppy on Ice in the fourth race on a Thursday, and I played pick fives where I would have been alive to basically everybody that could stand up in the fifth leg. If he won the fourth, I got to the fourth leg. There was already one nice price. I knew I was going to be alive to huge money if he won, because he was 28-1. Well, I had to bet something in the race itself, because I couldn't allow myself to not score if this horse finished in the money. So I bet some exactas and trifectas, and I ended up making a couple thousand on the exactas and tries. But, you know, if he had hit one, I would have hit about 15 or 20 grand in the pick five.
Wow.
So you have to, you know, he was a huge price. So you have to do that, because you want to leverage your best opinions. You sure as hell don't want to squander them.
Nick Tamro, everybody, and Tam, 1215 SHRP, Sam Houston Race Park, and we'll look forward to talking next week. Nick, thanks a lot.
Sounds great, my friend. Talk soon. Have a great weekend. Good luck.
Nick Tamro, folks. Might not be anybody better. Let's get to Schaap. We've got 15 minutes. Actually, make it 13. And so we got to get Schaap and Papo in real quick. We're just going to fire through. We'll just pick winners. That's what we're going to do. And Schaap is going to pick some now. How's New Orleans?
It's good. It was nice to get here to some almost spring-type, summer-type weather early.
Nice.
It's cooled off a little, had some good food, working hard, and excited for tomorrow's card for sure, and today's card as well.
Well, we got good news earlier about the weather. Might not be as rainy as feared, so let's assume that things are going to be pretty good. Let's start with the LeCompte and work our way back, and give us your best opinions. Scott Shapiro?
Sounds good. You know, LeCompte, I landed on confidence game, Steve, just 2 for 5. But easy to forgive the non-wins. Damon's Mound dominating that first effort. Keith DeSormo, low numbers first off, first out. And then Big Maiden win. The Iroquois had a brutal trip. And then finished second to Forbidden Secret at Keeneland in a day where the inside and speed was very good. And then a really big effort on November 26th, the same day as the Kentucky Jockey Club. Higher Brisnet number, faster raw time than Instant Coffee pretty significantly. So I think confidence game gets a good trip, and also pretty high on two Phils who should get a good trip from out there. And if there is some precipitation of any sort, he proved he liked that he off going in that win in the street sense when he overcame that trouble into the first turn. And good job by Jareth Loveberry, will be aboard again to, get him settled and into a real good spot. So it's a confidence game over two Phils for me, with some respect, of course, to the Brad Cox favorite Instant Coffee.
Very good. Work backwards, the Louisiana.
Louisiana, I'm all in on Zozo's 3-1 morning line favorite. I think this horse, always been a big fan of him. He's done very little wrong in his career. The runner-up effort in Louisiana Derby, and of course being caught up and wide in that hot pace in the Derby, and actually running pretty well to split the field, all things considered. I thought the comeback race was excellent. He's run well here at Fairgrounds in all three starts, and I'm looking forward to seeing him start his four-year-old campaign, and I think he's going to make a big impression in the older handicap division this year. So all in on number 8, Zozo's.
Marcus's best bet of the day tomorrow as well. That gets us to the Silver Bullet Day, which is a lot of fun. Marcus surprised me cottoning up to Chop Chop on the class play.
Worst trips for a favorite of the Breeders' Cup. When we saw her last, the three efforts prior to that were very good. If there's an honest pace at all, I think she'll have no problem running this field down, even off a bit of freshening. Do respect two others in here, including the other Brad Cox runner, the Alice Look, who ever since the blinkers have come off has really been a new horse. The added ground probably didn't hurt either in those starts. You know, wired out of field, a maiden field, and then I thought ran a good second in the Untappable. And Forest Chimes for Jason Barkley, very visually impressive effort from off the pace on debut, going two turns. It was a good racetrack that day. Again, if there is some moisture in the track, she's proven that she can get over it, but looks like Chop Chop's going to be a short price and tough to beat.
Anything clever in the Kenner?
in the Kenner. Well, we're going to have to see how it shakes out, but I didn't have a strong opinion in there. I thought it was tough in terms of whether it comes off the dirt or stay, or comes off the turf or stays on the dirt. But that was more of a spread race for me. Nothing too specific or too creative.
All right, let's cover off the stakes, and then we'll, if there's any of the maiden races and the one allowance, you can just cherry pick from there. But the Bradley and the Krantz.
The Krantz, which is the fifth, I thought that Fancy Martini was pretty interesting. Ooh, at 8-1.
Wow, 8-1.
Yeah, has a win over this course. And that last race, the Mrs. Revere, you could, you know, they ran 1-2 around the track, 24-49-1, Bubble Rock, just controlling things, Joyful Applause, following her around. She should get a good trip in her 4-year-old debut. And, you know, I respect some of the other runners, but have kind of seen what I think their best shot is. I think Fancy Martini might have a chance to put forth a career best effort, you know, assuming this stays on the turf.
Nice. James Graham and Joe Sharp. I like it. And the Bradley.
The Bradley, I thought number 2 price talk. I know 3-1 on the line, not great price here. This is the same connections Brad Cox and Gaining Ground Racing that had Factor This win a bunch of races here, or overall and at Fairgrounds on this turf course. Thought she ran, or he ran huge in the Prairie Bayou at Turfway, wide throughout, ran third. The horse In Love and Chellis, good competitive runners that would fit big in this spot, came from off, way off the pace to run him down. I thought he was the clear one to beat, giving some respect to Gray's Creek as a little bit of a better price option.
All right, that gives us coverage on the stakes. What about any of the maiden races? What, anybody jump off the page?
I do like, in the third, I like Caliestro. The 6 horse. I believe you had Cherie on earlier.
I did.
I didn't get to hear the interview.
I did.
Did she speak highly of him?
We were more focused on the filly, okay. and we hit a few others, but there's some things to like.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of reading between the lines things to like. This horse got bet right into the teeth of Champion's Dream in that debut at Saratoga, chased the pace and tired that day. They spent $385,000 for a Son of Upstart with a modest dam side pedigree. The dam's 0-7. And now, you know, some fast works and gets Lasix, and they bring right into a 2-turn spot, making me believe that they think he's fit. I think he's going to run a big race as Javier coming into town takes the call. So number 6, Caliestro, 4-1 in the third. And the other maiden opinion I have is in the 10th. Which is part of that late pick 5. And I like number 4, Baseline Meter, for Neil Pessin. Fourth start, second at 2 turns. Raced against the flow in the first start at 2 turns. First start at Fairgrounds on December 8th. It basically ran 1-2-3 around the track. But better than looks, middle move in here. And while 4 wide on the far turn, I think with Corey Lannery in an inside post, maybe a little bit of a better time ride with a more favorable race shape will lead Baseline Beater hopefully to his first win at 8-1.
Excellent. All right. So quick rundown, the 3rd, the 6th, Cagliostro, 4-1. The 5th, the Marie Krantz, Fancy Martini, 8-1, Joe Sharp. Price Talk, 3-1, the 2 in the Colonel Bradley, the 8th in the 10th, Baseline Beater with Neil and Corey Lannery, the 4, Chop Chop with a little bit of Ali's look and Forest Chime, so 5 with some 4-7, and earlier Zozos, who I think seems to be an acclamation type tomorrow, and then Confidence Game over 2 fills, the 4-8 in the 14th. Enjoy it. Scott Shapiro, Scott Chap 34, everybody, and we'll talk next week, and I'll be there with you for Risen Star.
Awesome. Look forward to that, and looking forward to a fun weekend, and thanks as always.
Not at all. There it is, Scott Shapiro, and I've got a rush to get Papo in here and get some form to win plays as well, and well, I did okay. I was hoping to have a good 5 minutes for Papo, but it'll have to be in the 3.5 to 4 minute range, assuming we can reach him. And there he is, Papo. Sorry, we're a little tight, but we'll get the form to win charting up. What did you look at?
Pretty much did all the stakes at Fairgrounds, Steve.
Sweet, run them down.
Yeah, sure. Mary G. Krantz, 8.5 furlongs on the turf. Looking for value, like the 4 horse a bit. Carpe Venom, 8-1 on the morning line. The six horse Wave of Goodness also fits, along with Lake Lucerne, the three horse. The Colonel Bradley, also on a 16th on the turf. Interested in the five horse, Ready to Perform at 6-1. That's kind of the price play I'm interested in, as well as Gray's Creek. And then, of course, the two horse Price Talk also fits. And the 5.5 furlong sprint, the Duncan Kenner. If the nine horse draws in, my pal Maddie was top on form to win no matter which way I ran it. Be interested in the six horse from a price standpoint, Sign of War at 8-1. And then if you're playing the verticals, Yankee 7's a little bit sneaky on form to win at 20-1. So I'd be interested in that horse underneath. In the Silver Bullet Day, I'm interested in Amber Cascade for Sherry DeVoe, Free Drop Billy out of her Desert Party Mayor. Absolutely fits on form to win and at 6-1. It's a bit of a price. You know, Chop Chop is ranked second, but that's not a price play. And then I'd be interested also getting in the mix of three horse. Not sure how you pronounce that, but Hey Umobano.
No, Hey You Never Know. Hey You Never Know.
Hey You Never Know. Sorry, yeah. Steve. I was trying to make it Spanish.
I know.
8-1, yeah. So I'd be interested in them. And then in the Louisiana Stakes, I'm really going to key off. I like Run Classic at the two horses.
Brett Calhoun.
At 4-1. And then in the mix, I'll have Mr. Wireless, Happy American. And then underneath, deep verticals, maybe the one horse business model, who wasn't too far off.
Two with 159. Okay.
And then for LeConte, like the three horse Bromley.
Another boy, Bromley, yeah. A ton of love today, Bromley.
Yeah, 5-1. I mean, he fit when I ran the my setting was 8. I look for horses that have already gone a mile, so. You know, not saying the one stretching out camp, but I was looking for data on ones that have gone at least a mile. Bromley fit, and so did Two Fills, the 8 horse. I don't like the horse if he's 2-1. But from a value play off the morning line, I'd be interested in him.
Well, you know that Echo Again's going to take money. Cox will take money, and both of the Coxes probably, if both run. We still don't know. And, yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting. I think the line will be, or the betting will be balanced.
Yeah, should be. We'll see. Any idea what the weather's supposed to be like tomorrow?
It's going to be better than originally anticipated.
Okay.
That's the way it looks.
But like, just a reminder to those using form to win, if there's a change in the type of surface, like if it's sloppy or muddy, or if the turf has some give into it, you can just go into form to win and select the type of turf, whether it's good or yielding. And then you can see how horses have performed over that type of course also.
Papo Morales, everybody, Form to Win, and we'll get the charting up for you. And, of course, right there installed right with your AmWager interface. And, Papo, good luck this weekend. We'll talk early next week.
Yeah, sounds great, Steve. And also, I think I've come up with the equation for European horses running on firm turf. So
sweet.
Hope to finalize that next week. Got a call with the guys from Australia.
I love it.
So we'll see. It'll be cool to play around with it and see how it works out. So, but we've got the initial work. The equation's done. So we'll see.
Outstanding. All right. I'm looking forward to that. And, Papo, I appreciate it. And we will talk early next week. And right now I'm going to send you out into the weekend. Let's hope the weather holds for everywhere we're playing. Want to thank Frank McGoey and Marcus Hirsch and Schapp with the fairgrounds coverage. And, of course, Callie Francois joined us. Nice action at Laurel. Hammer, Scully, Nick Tamaro, and now Papo. Just a Song Before I Go. Perfect. Good luck this weekend, everybody. Talk to you Monday.
Traveling twice the speed of sound, it's easy to get burned. When the shows were over, we had to get back home. And when we opened up the door, I had to be alone. She helped me with my suitcase. She stands before my eyes. hurting me.